This is an ABC podcast.
Hello, this is CoronaCast, a podcast all about the coronavirus. I'm health reporter Tegan Taylor.
And I'm physician and journalist Dr. Norman Swan. It's Tuesday, the 8th of September.
So Norman, we've talked a lot on this podcast before about healthcare workers in Victoria and getting coronavirus at work and that's a problem. Are those problems specific to Victoria, or is that a risk everywhere in Australia?
Well, on CoronaCast over the last couple of months, we have hypothesised that both the problems in aged care and indeed in hospitals cannot just be confined to Victoria, because there's nothing particularly special about the way Victorians run their hospitals. It's pretty much the same way as they're run anywhere else in the country. And they're following the same national advice from the Infection Control Expert Group, which we've had comments about on the CoronaCast before, and aged care as well is a responsibility of the Commonwealth. So it's unlikely that there's too much difference. And sure enough, you've got, unfortunately, an outbreak of 5 cases in healthcare workers at Ipswich Hospital in Queensland, most of which seem to be from the COVID ward. And you have some cases in New South Wales, a couple of cases in New South Wales, in southwest Sydney and in the western suburbs. So I think that it's just a warning sign that we don't have it absolutely right in hospitals. Hospitals are high-risk environments. In Victoria, I think, just looking at the statistics, it's just hard to tell, but I think that over 40% of the cases in healthcare workers actually have been in aged care residential settings, but the rest have been in hospital settings. So hospitals are high-risk environments, and I just don't think that we've got it absolutely right. And to actually get it down to zero, there's got to be attention to every little detail. Surfaces, aerosols, how you take off your PPE. Right at the beginning of the pandemic, we quoted a study from Singapore, you might remember, Tegan, where 3 patients with COVID-19 and one was just spreading it everywhere, toilet. This virus just gets everywhere. And it means that healthcare staff have got to be super careful. But there are parts of the world where there's been almost zero spread. Singapore, there's one hospital in particular where I think there's virtually zero spread. Interestingly, what they've used is Australian technology, a mask, which is a respirator system. And they've been using those masks as well as infection control. And some hospitals in Australia use those masks, but not all. There's been a lot of concern about the use of masks and previous recommendations that they weren't particularly necessary outside high-risk areas, where they clearly are.
You've said before that healthcare workers catching COVID at work is unacceptable, and that's not really passing judgment on the healthcare workers themselves. It's the systems that they work in. Are those sorts of things the answers, these sorts of masks, or are there other systemic things that need to change?
I think with infection control, it's attention to all sorts of details. How you take off your PPE, how you put it on, how surfaces are cleaned. In previous situations where you've had methicillin-resistant staff, antibiotic-resistant golden staff, they've had to really be meticulous about how they clean wards, how often they change the curtains between beds and so on. The Royal Perth Hospital really got rid of their antibiotic-resistant staphylococcus by those sorts of attention, that sort of attention to detail. And it's even more pernicious with the COVID-19 virus. So it is a system issue, and it's probably no one big thing. It's a lot of little things that are going wrong, really hard to manage.
Well, dear CoronaCasters, if you work in healthcare anywhere in Australia, we'd love to know, what are you seeing? Do you think you're doing things really well? Is there anything that you think could be done better where you are? Just go to abc.net.au/coronacast and click on Ask a Question and leave us your comment there.
And a big shout out to Victoria, 40 cases yesterday, and we haven't got today's numbers yet by the time we record this CoronaCast. But really going in the right direction, and let's hope they get to that 30 to 50 number even sooner than predicted by the modelling.
Absolutely. So let's take some questions from the audience, Norman. And the first one today, how much time does Norman Swan spend researching COVID-19 each day? This listener wants to know, what journals, websites, resources do you go to first?
That's a good question. If you were to ask the Prime Minister's office, they probably think I pluck it out of thin air, but I don't. No, seriously. I look at reputable journals, most of which have coronavirus papers being updated on a daily basis. So I look at the group of journals produced by the American Medical Association, the Journal of the American Medical Association. They've got all sorts of JAMA subspecialties, each one of which is producing papers on coronavirus, so I look at that. The Lancet has a growing number of journals, and they're all producing papers and studies on coronavirus, and I look at that. I look at the British Medical Journal, and I look at the New England Journal of Medicine. I also try to look at Science and Nature. So a lot of my day is spent scouring it. And then for daily data, it's really hard, but I look at the Johns Hopkins University. They've got a global statistical, very good representation of what's going on around the world. And then if I'm not sure about that, you look at individual countries. There's a group of young doctors in Australia led by a woman called Catherine McKinnon, who are producing very good data on healthcare workers on a daily basis. So big shout out to them. So you just compare it all and you see there's a lot of variation in what you get. And sometimes you've just got to make a judgment call of which you think is the most reliable.
It is pretty exciting to see that a lot of the journals, which are usually paid subscribers only, have made their coronavirus data publicly available. The only downside then is that you have to basically be a scientist to be able to understand it, which is why we ask you the questions, Norman.
Well, yes, except that people are really good at sorting this out. There was a study a few years ago of when they made the National Library of Medicine in the United States more widely available to people. The general public went in and they did literature searches. They found the journals. And that research showed that people had made a pretty good attempt at understanding what the papers found. But I mean, everybody finds it difficult to read molecular biology, molecular genetics. When I was at medical school, genetics was a very short subject. It really wasn't a big subject in your medical school course at all. These days it's huge, and I struggle sometimes with these papers to really understand what's going on. The other thing that I do is that I have a group of people who know a lot, who don't mind me phoning them up and picking their brains. And they're very generous with their time, and they know a lot.
Absolutely. This does not come from a vacuum.
No. And what's salutary is I get very excited about something, think I've really found something big, and they hose me down big time.
So Gary, Lawrence and Simon have all asked questions on a theme. So let's talk about this. They're all asking about the case rate in Europe and the United Kingdom and why the death rate there doesn't seem to be as high as it looked at the beginning of the pandemic.
There are lots of reasons for that. And we also had a question from one of those three about lockdown versus not, you know, versus Victoria, and making the comment that the UK numbers seem to be going up, as indeed they are going up. 1,800 in the last day or so, it's probably a running average of about 1,800, and the epidemic curve is going up. It's nothing like it was a couple of months ago, but it's going up. And the death rate does look as if it's fallen. But remember that the testing rate has gone up hugely in most of those countries. Therefore, the rate would go down. And when you do more testing, you find more young people with the virus, and they're not the ones who are dying in high numbers. They are dying, but not in high numbers. And then other things have improved as well. So the treatment in hospital has improved. So if you're severely unwell in most parts of the world now, you would get dexamethasone. That reduces the chances of dying by about 20%. And there's also under-recording of deaths as well, particularly in aged care settings. So you're never quite sure that the total number of deaths being reported for COVID are the true number of deaths. We're almost certainly missing some. And one of the benchmarks there is to look at the excess deaths over last year. That does tell you that COVID around the world is having a big effect. Spain is not in good shape. France is not in good shape. And which is why the UK's slapped quarantine on those two countries in terms of European travel.
It is tricky to compare our local numbers, which are based on the way we record infections and deaths here in Australia, with countries overseas which have their own way of recording deaths and cases. How can we really be sure that we're comparing apples and apples?
It's very hard to do that. If you compare Victoria to the UK, Victoria has half the rate of COVID-19 infections of the UK. So UK is well over 500 on average per 100,000, and Victoria is around about through August was about 200 per 100,000. It'll be much lower than that now. So lockdown has worked, and when you don't have lockdown, you just keep going through very large numbers of cases, where you really can't open up to a huge extent. Otherwise, you're getting a problem. So you may on paper look as if you've opened up, but people's behaviour doesn't change. They don't go out. They're not entirely relaxed about going up. Young people might be, but not the average person in the population.
So people are still taking precautions even if they're not being required by law.
Yeah, people's behaviour has changed, which is another reason why the death rate probably has come down as well. So there is a degree of social distancing, even though you see people on the beach at Bournemouth in large numbers, or you see nightclubs in Malaga, in Spain, thumping and heaving. The average person in many countries is actually taking care.
Well, that's all we've got time for today.
Yeah, keep on sending in your questions. We love to getting them. That's at abc.net.au/coronacast. And please send us your comments, particularly we'd love to hear from healthcare workers. And we'll see you tomorrow.
See you then.